Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
All right, welcome everyone to episode 35 of the MV Red Podcast. I'm Michael Metzinger. Above me is Dane Davis, and we're thrilled this evening to be joined by our first candidate for Ohio governor to join our podcast, Joe Blystone. So thank you so much, Joe, for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. I sure do appreciate it.
Absolutely. So one of the things I find interesting is you have an immense social media following, a core group of supporters who I see them on Facebook all this time. I see them on Twitter, very in favor of you, all on board. But I feel as though there's a lot of Republicans out there who might not know who Joe Blystone is. So can you share a little bit about your life story and kind of how you decided to kind of come into the political arena and run for governor?
Well, I tell you what, I believe I'm like most Ohioans. Over, you know, 90 plus percent of Ohioans that's never thought about getting into politics. I grew up in northeastern Ohio. Obviously, the Rust Belt. It used to be a manufacturing powerhouse between the auto manufacturing and the steel mills. It was thriving when I was growing up, but yet all that's gone. It's been pushed out of Ohio because of policy. We moved away from there when I was a freshman in high school. Actually, moved down towards the central Ohio area. My father was a truck driver that always had a side hustle at the house. So I grew up with some great work ethic, and that has kind of carried me through my life. Have I always made good business decisions? No, my 20s was not good. I'm a true entrepreneur. I will risk to succeed. And anybody that's been in business or successful at business, We always want to succeed the first time, but a lot of times that doesn't work out. But I never lost my grit and determination to succeed. And today I run a pretty successful agricultural business. I'm a cow-calf operation to feedlot. Back in 2004, I built a packing house on the farm, and that's kind of organically grown into a retail butcher shop, a bakery, a restaurant, a tap room, and an event center. We started out with 3 employees on the farm, and today I employ a little over 70 people. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. All I can say is, this is the greatest country in the world with the most opportunity. You just have to have the drive and determination to reach out and grab it and run with it. There might be some hurdles at succeeding, but don't lose the faith, and always lead with some honesty, some integrity, and some forthright, and just treat people good, and they'll and you will succeed. The last 2 years, it's been very stressful on many Ohioans, especially a lot of business people who have put everything they got into building business. And then for the governor in this administration to walk in and say, you are deemed unessential, but the Walmart, the Target, the Amazon, you're deemed essential. And many of these mom and pop shops had to shut down to never open again. And that's just wrong. Luckily, I was not in the situation. I did shut my restaurant down for about 8 weeks. My butcher shop, my retail store stayed open. We had record profits those 8 weeks just because you couldn't find meat. So people were lined up around my business for 6-8 hours straight. But many places, they didn't have a second. They didn't have another business to fall back on. And it was just wrong what happened. The scientific data is not behind what they're doing, what they did then and what they're doing now. And whatever happened to 2 weeks to flatten the curve is now 2 years. You know, folks like you and I, we sit on the sideline. We vote for the lesser of the two evils, and we hope there'll be a different outcome. But here we are. We're living in communism.
So Dane here from Geauga. There's a lot of what you say that I agree with, a lot, actually. My question, first of all, you've run, I think, a very strong campaign. The Blystone people, when you find them on the internet, are some of the most passionate people out there, whether it's in like the Facebook comments, etc. And your hat, the cowboy hat or the rancher hat, has almost become like an icon in the state of Ohio. Because if you see those hats or on the signs, like, people might not even know the name, right? But they recognize that. So kudos to you on what the campaign's been able to do. But I guess my question would be, you're running for governor, right? The governor is the top seat in the state of Ohio. You never ran for anything before. I respect the citizen running for office greatly. But what was it that made you decide to run for governor instead of, say, state senate, state house, you know, all those other little positions all throughout the state?
Well, we know if you watch Columbus or even in Washington right now, it's a big old cluster. Nothing gets done. If anything gets done, it's done at snail speed. Everybody's fighting against each other, and nobody's standing up for our rights, not our legislature, not our county admins, nobody. So if we're going to fix this, where is it that I would be best fitted to stand up for the people here in Ohio? Well, there's only one seat, and that's the governor's chair. You know, there was quite a few folks that came to me and said, Joe, you know, just like you said, why don't you start out? You never run for any elected position. Why don't you start out at, you know, township trustee or maybe even a House of Representatives or something like that? And I said, well, the problem is we can't get something done. And right now, people are yearning for representation that we don't have here in Ohio. You know, everybody's looking at Florida. Look at what they're doing in Florida. Governor DeSantis, the guy's a rock star. He is fighting for his people. And we don't have that here. And to be quite honest with you, some of the opposition that's running against me, they won't bring that. They're just going to bring more DeWine 2.0. And I think that's why I'm getting so much traction, so much attention, because if you had been a politician before, you already got a strike against you in this race. We don't want politicians. Politicians, year after year, promises everything and they never deliver. We want an outsider, just like Trump. We want somebody that we're not politically correct. We're going to say what we say. We're going to stand up for what's right. And we're not looking for money, power, or prestige.
So I think Michael's got some polling data, because I think we'll get into that in a moment. Because I think there are some good questions. I'll turn over to Michael. I got some more to ask, but I'll let Mike, he's the data guy, so I'll let him go ahead.
Well, I'd like to know, so before we get into the polling question, were you over the course of the last few years, especially since the pandemic started, were you already making yourself known, vocal when it comes to policy in Ohio? Or was it, you know, this pandemic came, you, like so many others, were frustrated and you started to build a following. And how did that all come about? Because you have, what, 80, 90,000 followers on Facebook. How did that coalition start growing?
So, up to the pandemic, I was, I'm a small business guy. I'm a farmer. Put me on the back 40, let me take care of my cows, drink a little beer, and nobody knows my name. That's what I like. I never wanted to be out in front of anybody. I didn't really care if anybody knew my name. That's not who I am. It was when the pandemic, and I just want to make a note, because this is not the first pandemic. It's not going to be the last pandemic, but
yeah, that's fair.
What was different about this pandemic is obviously it was a presidential election year. So they were going to do anything and everything to get Trump out of that seat, I believe. And that's, again, that's my opinion. When the scientific data was not there to back up what DeWine kept on pushing, I decided that, you know what, I'm going to start having Liberty events on my farm. I have a nice big event center, and people were just stressed out. They were tired. You know how it was. It just wasn't a good environment in Ohio. And, you know, everybody was fighting against each other. Your neighbor was turning you in because you didn't have a mask on. You couldn't go to the local grocery store if you didn't have a mask on. I mean, it's truly right out of the Adolf Hitler playbook. You know, let's put neighbor against neighbor, family against family, government against community. That's what we were living in. So I decided, you know what, I wasn't going to abide by the mask mandates. Matter of fact, I told them I was not. I put a big sign on the front of my building. It said, if you don't want to engage with unmasked staff members, just don't enter my building. You're more than welcome to call the phone number. We can help you in the parking lot, but I'm not going to mask up my clientele nor my staff for monetary gain. And I don't really care about the monetary part of it. If God decides my time is done on this farm and in this business, have at it. I can always go somewhere else and make a living. So I got a lot of faith. And I believe people just need to not worry about the money and stand up for what's right and stand up for community, stand up for people. So I started having these Liberty events. The first one I had about 200 people showed up. But then it really took off. The biggest one I had here was the third one. We had almost 800 people here.
Wow.
And they were from all over the state. People just wanting to come and enjoy some normalcy, unmasked. They wanted to bring their kids. They ran around the farm and just had a little bit of, you know, what America's all about. And they got refueled and was ready to go back at it. That's kind of how I kind of how I got known a bit, because I was standing up against all this nonsense. At that time, I never thought about getting into politics. It wasn't till the late part of December of 2020 that I really, nobody was jumping into the governor's race. There was nobody out there saying, I'm going to primary DeWine.
Right.
So, you know, I really, I just buckled down and said some, a lot of prayers. God and I had some conversations, and I just felt that this is where he was, leading me to be. And so obviously I had to have a conversation with my wife, and that didn't go over very well. Her answer was heck no, but she eventually, you know, she came around and she's in full support and she's a trooper, and she's weathered the storm this whole year of campaigning. And we kicked it off the middle of February last year. We've been on the road for a year now, 6-7 days a week, going around and talking to just about anybody that will listen to us all around this state. And we truly have a big movement going on. We have a lot of volunteers. Nobody is paid. And people see the writing on the wall, and they've decided that, you know what, we're kind of tired of voting for the lesser of the two evils. We're going to get involved, and we're going to take our state back.
So, Joe, here's my question for you. Okay, so here, look, I just was at a school board meeting yesterday, and or not yesterday, maybe it was 2 days ago, about the mask mandates, right? And I got three young kids. And I think it's horrible what they're doing with the masking with kids. And the you know, if a parent wants to do that for their kid, fine. I'm not going to, you know, whatever. But yep, to force that in the schools and to take that choice out of the parent's hand, especially given all the side effects it's been causing, it's disastrous. So like you, I'm very concerned about the direction the country's going in. Yep. And to me, I don't really feel confident if DeWine gets in there for a second term that we're never going to have a lockdown again. I hear you on that. Like, I think that case counts go up, DeWine could definitely lock it down again. Maybe not, right? He would be a second term. He you know, there's no run for reelection, right? So who cares? So, but here's my problem is, what about Jim Renacci, right? Mm-hmm. The guy's got more money. He's got a built out campaign, et cetera. If your goal is to take down DeWine, you guys are arguably splitting the vote, allowing DeWine to get in. And Michael's got the poll up. Michael, why don't you go in there? But like, there's an opportunity to take down DeWine. But if the opposition is divided, house divided against itself cannot stand. Michael, I'll let you read the poll off. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with this, but
yeah, and I know, Joe, I think you had commented about it on your social media channels the other day. Trafalgar, who again, well regarded amongst, especially amongst conservative circles, one of the few that was accurate in 16 and 18 and 20. And some of the polls that we had seen come out, Joe, were from these either internal polls, like on the Senate side, or these candidate groups. We didn't really have an independent picture. We get a true independent poll that comes out and shows, although DeWine's probably liking the fact that he's up maybe, you know, 18 to 20 points, he's in a precarious position, well under 50%. So he's certainly vulnerable. But then the eye-opening thing for me from an analytical perspective is you were neck and neck with Jim Renacci. And I know Jim has significant cash funds compared to you. And again,
he seems $4 million.
Right? Yeah. And so I guess the takeaway I've noticed on social media is, oh, Joe should be the one to drop out. But playing devil's advocate here, you have less money, you have a grassroots campaign, and that number might be understating your true level of support, because I think your support, especially in rural Ohio, is immense that people don't really realize. So what are your comments on that poll and kind of how that all shapes out?
Well, it's I'm glad you asked, because we're pretty damn excited about that poll. You know, it was actually the first independent poll that was put out. All the other polls were paid for by, you know, whether they were done in-house or paid by the campaign. Most of those polls didn't include me. It was DeWine and Renacci head-to-head. And as far as I'm concerned, if you do a poll DeWine against a groundhog, and the groundhog would probably be leading 10 points. So, you know, let's be fair about that. But the poll has Renacci and I head to head. The guy has spent $2 million. I've spent a couple hundred grand and have gained historically 20%, and I don't know if that's ever been done before from a grassroots candidate that has never been in politics. So it is an historic movement. Mary Taylor, when she was running, she didn't even garner 20% of the electorate. So if, as you know, probably DeWine won the last primary with 499,000 votes. I believe Mary Taylor had, somewhere around 350,000 votes. We have 1.9 million registered Republicans in this state. We have about 8 million independents. According to the report of that poll, it was probable primary voters. So that's where the big difference is, because my supporters and this year, a lot of these people, they've never voted in a primary before. People are just not engaged. Historically, they'll go vote. They'll vote in a presidential year in the general election. A lot of times the primary, going around this state, many people didn't even know what a primary election was. So we've had to educate a lot of people. And if you look at my my campaign page, we have SOS May 3rd. So people know primary is May 3rd, as long as the state of Ohio doesn't screw us and move that, that will be a big problem.
Yeah. But that's who knows when the actual primary is going to be. I mean, they already moved it. This is a sidebar, not to get off topic, but
like, yeah. And I know they've kind of hinted that that could happen because of the whole redistricting thing. I've heard on the radio, a couple people hint that if they don't have these maps drawn, they could drag that out further, which is the last, obviously, I'm sure you want to deal with.
Right. So I pray that we stay on track, and May 3rd is it. I believe we will have record-setting participation. I believe even if Renacci and Hood and DeWine is in this race, I believe there's a silent vote out there, just like when Trump took over this state. I believe there's a silent vote, and we can take this primary.
If Donald Trump were to endorse Jim, what would you do? Would you stay in the race?
That's a big question.
Sorry to put you on the spot, Joe, and we're asking the big questions. Sorry. Yep.
I don't know. I don't think he will. Everything we're hearing out of Florida, he won't. Matter of fact, he doesn't think Jim's a winner. And he was quoted in Politico as saying Jim's not a winner. You know, if you can't win a Senate race against Sherrod Brown, how in the world are you going to win Ohio? And when this poll that shows myself and Renacci head to head, I don't think Trump would be willing to jump in this backing Jim when it's not showing that he can pull it away.
Yeah. I tend to agree, especially because he already endorsed him, like you mentioned, in 2018. Does he risk endorsing the same person twice if that person doesn't have a legitimate chance? And I would think that the poll that came out the other day got to open up a lot of eyes with people to see kind of your level of support. Because at least around here, maybe some of the Republicans that I'm friends with and what have you, you're trying to push this whole idea of Renacci. But I know you have a large contingent of people out there. And when you see those numbers, there's something there when it's neck and neck between you and Jim. So I tend to agree that I question whether he'll actually come forward with an endorsement.
I got a question. So is there a possibility? So here's how I think of this race, right? Maybe this is just what my gut's telling me. DeWine's got a base of support, but I agree with you. It's not the majority of Republicans here. Out of 100, I say he's got 40%, okay? And I think those are diehard DeWine guys. You're not going to win them. I think the majority of Republicans in this state, 60%, maybe even 65%, are against DeWine. But if you got two anti-DeWine candidates, right, you're splitting up that vote. Is there a scenario that you would consider where you guys kind of join forces? And one of you runs for governor, one of you runs for another position. You guys work together. You take down DeWine with that 60% majority instead of come primary day. You get 30, Jim gets 30, and DeWine gets 40. And guess what? He wins, right?
Well,
did I do that math right? 30, 30, 40. Yeah, yeah.
I'm expecting, I'd like to see the next several weeks, Jim sees that he's making no traction and drop out. Jim has a big ego, and I think the last thing he wants to do is spend money and spin his wheels and not be successful. So I guess we'll see. We'll see. I don't have any intention of teaming up with Jim. I don't trust the man. He's a typical politician that talks out of both sides of his mouth, and that's not somebody I want to partner with. Integrity means something to me.
Well, I got to ask about that because I follow the Jim page, and I follow all the pages just to follow. I should follow your. I don't follow yours. I'll do that after this show. But just to see what they're posting, right? You know, just to see this is what they're saying. And it seems to me that Jim is saying the right things. Like he wants to cut taxes. That's great. I think we need to cut taxes in Ohio because we're one of the worst states in the Midwest. Yeah. On the vaccine mandates, he's been opposed to that. On the masking, he's been opposed to that. So it seems like, you know, from following that, I don't see how Jim isn't a conservative. On the refugees, bringing the refugees in Ohio, which DeWine was all in favor, Jim was against that, right? Illegal immigration. DeWine is weak on illegal immigration. Jim's in favor of cracking down on that. So I'll ask you, why do you think Jim is not a conservative? Or like, what's your problem with Jim on the issues?
Well, Jim came out early and he said that private business should be able to mandate jabs. We have that in a text. We've put that out there. But then he turns around and he said if the 218 bill would go through, he would sign it. Well, again, that excludes the medical industry. Well, then he came out and said, well, I'm for 248. Well, you know, it's typical political speech. I'm going to go outside. I'm going to see what way the wind's blowing, and that's where I'm going to land. Well, we're tired of that nonsense. We see that time and time again, and it wasn't till Trump got in there and really opened our eyes to all the nonsense, all the corruption, all the backroom deals. And we want somebody very Trump-like that's going to stand up. And not because something is blowing the right way. We're just going to do what's right. And that's not Jim. Look at his voting record when he was in Congress. He did vote for, even though he tries to skew this whole thing, he did vote for the Maloney Amendment. The Maloney Amendment is supporting transgender rights in the bathroom. And he tries to sway that, you know, we're too stupid to understand that. Well, no, we're not. And we're not going to have that nonsense in Ohio. So, you know, you can go to the Heritage Foundation, look at his voting record. He votes like a Democrat, and we don't want a Democrat running our state.
So one thing I do want to get into is a couple of issues. So one that I care about is the threat that is taking place right now with, I'm sure you're familiar with it, this EdChoice program. So I guess my first question is, where do you stand on the idea of school choice And secondly, if let's say you're in favor of school choice, what would you do to preserve it? Because there is a threat right now with some groups, a lawsuit that they're questioning the constitutionality of it. And Ohio's come a long way with school choice. And so where does Joe Blystone stand on that?
Yeah. Well, there's a bill in Columbus. It's not getting a lot of traction right now, but it's called the Backpack Bill. What the Backpack Bill does, it sets up a savings account of public monies for the child. So if your child's in the public school system, obviously the money's there. If you decide, you know what, they're not doing my child any favors, I'm going to move them over here to the private school, Christian school, charter school, whatever. The money moves with the child. What that in turn does is now your local public school system is running a business and they have to compete for every single child that comes through that front door. I think obviously, you know, we know when competition arises, quality of service should get better. And if quality of service is not, the business will go out of business. And that's how we need to manage our public school system, because, you know, there's too many things that's going on in the public school systems, and our education system gets a big old F in this state. We need to get back to educating and not indoctrinating. And between the CRT, the 1619 Project, or the pornographic sex ed nonsense, transgender stuff, we shouldn't be teaching this stuff to 7-year-olds.
I think that it's amazing, like all the stuff that they have time to teach children when, if you look at the scores in like basic reading, writing, arithmetic are at lows, right? And with kids have essentially missed a year to 2 years of schooling, and yet they want to pile in all this other stuff. It's like, when do they actually learn how to read and write and to do basic math, right? I guess they don't, because there's only so many hours in a day. So I hear you on that. I have a question on taxes. So I think Ohio, in terms of a business environment, you tell me, you're a business owner. I'm a banker, so I'm the bad guy in this situation. But like in a business environment, I think Ohio is falling behind the Midwest. I think Indiana is a hell of a state to do business. I think the South is leapfrogging way ahead of Ohio, Arizona, Texas, Florida, right? So what is your idea to improve the, what do you see, part one, what do you see as a businessman in the state of Ohio doing business? And part two, how would you improve it?
Well, first, we're overtaxed, we're overregulated. We rank 45th in the country in business tax friendliness. So a big failure. The only businesses that are coming into this state are big conglomerates, you know, the Amazons, the Googles, the Intels, and that's because behind the curtain, we're giving them everything. We don't actually know everything we're giving them because, you know, that's, again, done behind the curtain. But small to medium sized businesses, they're not moving into this state. They can make more profit elsewhere. So why would you? First thing we need to do is we need to get rid of the CAT tax. It is in turn our corporate tax in this state. And according to the Buckeye Institute in Columbus, it's basically a think tank. They study tax structure and tax law all over the country. You know, getting rid of the tax, the CAT tax, that would move us from 45th to we'd be in the top 10. They say we should get some kind of growth spurt in between 6% and 9%. Mm-hmm. So just simple things like that. But beyond that, I believe we need to overhaul our tax structure. The amount of money that we waste in this state is phenomenal, and nobody's held accountable. You know, DeWine goes out and he mismanages $4.5 billion in unemployment fraudulent claims, and what's done about it? Absolutely nothing. We have all these government agencies that are not held accountable. Things like our unemployment issues, you know, that department should be a private, it should be subcontracted out to private business. Somebody who's bonded insured that if they waste our money, we still, we're still paid back. Right now, if our government wastes our money, we're not getting nothing back. Matter of fact, they come back to us and say, you know what, we don't have enough money to run this department. We need more of your tax dollars. So, I believe we need to work towards within the next five to seven years to moving over to a full consumption flat tax.
Yeah.
And I think with a full consumption flat tax, I believe, my gosh, you would really spur growth in this state. And we need to have the education part of that equation, though. You know, I talked to some of these small manufacturers. One sticking in my mind is down in Washington County, down on the river. Small manufacturing plant. His biggest issue was not getting business. He said he could build on 10 times, and he could have a growth. He could quadruple his staff. The problem is we're not getting minimal education to high school kids that he can put in his business and train them as intern train them. The only intern he tried to set up something with OU. And a local tech school down there, and all they wanted to do was fight with one another, trying to win grants. So he said, "The heck with it." The interns that he's able to pull, he pulls out of West Virginia. Wow. Now, why in the heck is Ohio? Why are we not getting the training for these young people to go into minimal manufacturing jobs? You know, manufacturing can't grow here if we don't have people to fill these positions.
That's fair. Yeah, I'll turn it over to Michael, but just as a comment, we can't find workers, right? And manufacturing, I don't think people realize how precarious of a situation we're in this country. A lot of the machines for the factories that we still have here are being run by people in their 60s, not their 40s, not their 30s, right, but their 60s, because they've been doing it for 20, 30 years. And it's like, man, when this guy retires, what the hell is that business going to do? And they'll make like some little widget. And you think, well, we don't need that little widget. Well, actually, yeah, you do, because that goes into so many little parts. And there's tons of these factories, not only in Ohio, but all across the Midwest. But neither here nor there. Michael, I know you got a good question lined up. I'll kick it over to you.
Yes. So you touched on economic development. You mentioned the Intel project. So from an outsider in Youngstown, Ohio, I've heard an idea that's been mentioned a few times on talk radio up here. And it's the premise is the state government, which the GOP's dominated for three decades, has done a lot to grow the Columbus metro area. And I know that's, you know, you're in that vicinity while the rest of the state kind of falls behind. And it's evident in the recent census. I know Columbus grew by, I think, like 15% in the metro area. Cincinnati maybe grew by 5%, but the rest of the state either had no population gain or even population loss. And so when we see Intel going to Columbus and other projects, I know there's other factors involved, but what would you do as governor to ensure that economic development isn't solely on one part of the state? So, you know, in 2030, we're not losing another congressional representative because our population is just not growing at a steady rate. Columbus is doing well. I mean, you're there. At least there's growth there and everything. Where I'm at, we're still kind of struggling. Cleveland, Toledo, other parts of the state, not doing nearly as well as Columbus. What would you do to ensure the rest of the state shares in that success that Columbus is seeing?
Well, it just comes down to money. We need to offer some kind of perk to build or maybe take over an empty manufacturing plant in the Rust Belt. But rural economics, you know, I think it's just a matter of taking care of everybody across this state, and I realize that why do they want to focus on Columbus? What is it that, you know, we have so much business around Columbus? We don't have enough staffing. We don't have the infrastructure, so we're always trying to catch up. And for some reason that never factors in. It's like, well, let's build this and then we'll worry about the roads later, or you know, it's always backwards. But again, you know, whether it's in southern Ohio, southeastern Ohio, northeastern Ohio, we should be working to grow business in these areas, and that's just the deal. You know, let's give the opportunities. Let's make it financially competitive or financially conducive for these businesses to say, you know what, I get this extra perk if I build my business in, or I take over a plant in Youngstown, Ohio, or Gallipolis, Ohio, or wherever. But again, it's going to take somebody who cares about the whole state and not just Columbus or Cleveland or Cincinnati. And honestly, I think some of these decisions are made, and it all has to do with the money that's coming back around the curtain into coffers.
So, and I do want to, real quick, Dan, I do want to clarify to the people, I have nothing against Columbus or the growth there. It's just, I want to see that same type of growth elsewhere in Ohio, Texas. There's different parts of Texas booming. Florida, you mentioned Governor DeSantis, many parts of Florida are booming. I want to see that sort of environment economically here in Ohio. So go ahead, right, Dan.
No, I agree. Columbus has a lot of flat land. Cleveland's a little hilly. They don't want to build factories in the hills, huh? No, I'm being sarcastic. No, I hear you in that, though. I think it's kind of unfair, and people think as long as Columbus is doing well, the state's doing well. And I don't think that's true, right? I think there are a lot of areas. Toledo especially needs a lot of love, and the Appalachian region, and that. A question for you is, you know, you're elected governor tomorrow, right? You take office. Part one, my question is, what's the first thing you do day one in office? And then part two is, you know, you'll probably have a Republican majority in the House and in the Senate. How do you work with the Republican state legislatures? Have you met with any of them? Do you have any endorsements there? Like, what's your plan for managing the legislative branch of government after you get in office? If you were to get in office, yeah.
Right. You know, does anybody want to be intertwined with Joe Blystone right now? Absolutely not. I mean, that's just common sense. These legislators, they're staying as far away from me as possible. Now, if I win the primary, they're all going to be knocking on the door. We know that. So that's just the game of politics. You know, and people ask me that if you are hired, how are you going to get anything done in Columbus? Well, if you watch Trump for 4 years, how did he get anything done in Washington? Well, he kind of educated the folks around this country and basically letting us know if our representative was faltering on a bill that needed passed. The reason things don't get done in Columbus is because nobody's paying attention. You know, we have this small, very small majority of people that actually knows who their representatives are, whether it's in the House or the Senate. They a very small majority that they know what bills are being negotiated or needs passed. But that's where I will come in because, you know, if you have somebody at the top pushing legislation and we have a good bill that needs passed and we do have roadblocks in the House or in maybe it's in a committee, who knows? I'm going to let their local constituents know that, yeah, your representative is doing a bang up job or he's stonewalling this great bill that needs passed. And that's how we get stuff done. You know, Ohio, just a little example, Ohio Health, you know, they came out here a month or two ago and they said, you know, we gave our staff members a due date. They have to be vaccinated by this date. So we were getting inundated by healthcare workers calling and saying, you know, hey, here's what's going on at Ohio Health, one of the biggest health providers in the state. So my team put a group of people together and we found out where the CEO resides and it's up in Delaware County, just north of Columbus, lives in Tartan Fields, a big multi-million-dollar community. And we went up there and I personally didn't because I was on another part of the state, but I would have. And our team went up there and protested in front of his house. You know, 2 days later, they pulled back and said they're not going to mandate that jab to their employees. But it took somebody making him feel uncomfortable to change that policy within that hospital. I don't believe if we didn't do that, I think they would have, stood firm on their mandate, and I believe a lot of people would have quit their jobs. But that we have to hold these legislators accountable. We need to know what they're working on at any given time, and we need to make sure that the legislation we need passed gets passed. This HB 248, no mandatory vaccines, no mandatory vaccine passports. You know, that bill should have went through easily if we truly have constitutional conservatives, but they couldn't even get 9 votes to get it out of health committee on the House floor, which, you know, every single one of these people need fired. If they can't stand up for our individual health autonomy, why in the world are they down there representing us? Because we're the idiots that hired them. So we need to educate our local communities that here's what's happening in Columbus and here's why we need a new representative.
So, Mike, I think the first part, maybe you'd answer it, but what would you do day one differently from a Jim Renacci or, well, Mike DeWine, I think, is very clear, or even a Democrat? Like, what is day one complete? How's it different than everybody else?
So day one, I truly hope that I truly hope we're not still dealing with this, you know, mask and shots and all this nonsense. I don't know. I mean, here we are 2 years in and we're still dealing with this nonsense. If in fact that's still going on, day one, I will sign an executive order for that to go away.
Okay.
We will use our Ohio Constitution, Section 1, Article 21, to combat that so-called mandates. Especially, it's hurting our children, and we see that. But that will be day one. Also, you know, I want to get every single county sheriff at a round table and come up with a plan of attack on human trafficking. Here in this state, we rank 4th in human trafficking in the country.
Yeah, That's pretty crazy. I've heard that a couple of times. That's insane to me. But yeah, keep going. Sorry. It's a weird thing that Ohio of all places.
Yeah, so number four, and that's just because of our where we're located, our Route 70 and Route 71, north and south, east and west. It's just conducive for human trafficking. Toledo ranks number three in the country regarding cities. But nobody's talking about this, not our governor, not our media, not our legislators, nobody. This is a $38 billion industry. We have, Mr. Epstein's brother, Les Wexner, down here. We got his name on buildings, and I believe he's involved with all this nonsense.
Well, I think he should certainly be taken off any sort of building. Lex Wexner, I agree with you on that. He's way too close with Epstein. And I think it was DeWine, I want to say, that got money from him. And I think he should return the money. I think that there is zero doubt that guy is way too close to Epstein for anybody decent to be comfortable with. So I think that money should just, go to a charity or give it back to him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, in our CPS system, needs a total rehab. There's actually child trafficking going on through the CPS system. We need to prioritize. We need to make sure that children are safe. They rely on us adults, and if we can't keep children safe in this state, we truly do have a problem going on.
Go ahead. No, so I was just gonna say my last question. Let's say you win the primary, you're elected governor. Where do you see this state 4 years from now? How is it different from February 2022? Where is Ohio at in relation to other states, in relation to where we're at right now?
Oh, I believe one will be a sanctuary state for freedom. First and foremost, people are looking for freedom. They're looking for our constitutional rights to be upheld, not thrown out the back window when a pandemic comes down the pike or whatever else. Our Constitution is the law of the land. Let's start abiding by it. Economically, I think we'll be in a lot better place because I am going to push legislature. We're going to save a lot of money in this state. We're going to get people back to work. If you're an able-bodied person, you're either going to go back to work or you're going to starve because we're not going to have the middle class, blue-collar workers working their hind ends off so you can collect on the government dole. And again, these are kind of things that you won't hear from a politician because I'm looking for 4 years to break the system in half and make it whole again. These politicians, they want you to hire them so they can make a career out of this. I'm not looking for a career. I got a great job. I love feeding cows. I wouldn't even be in this if these politicians did their job and did it correctly and stood up for us. But they poked the bear one too many times, and now we're going to fight for what this country was built on.
I have one final question and then a comment. This is unrelated to the governor's race, but in terms of the meat supply and the price increases we've seen in meat, I mean, it's crazy just to get some, beef or some steak. It's really rough. And people think, the farmers or the ranchers must be making money. It doesn't necessarily work like that. They don't want everybody to be priced out of beef because then people stop eating it. But what do you think is going on with the supply chain, with food, with beef? Why are prices going up? And, what the hell is going on there? That's a simple question.
Well, I mean, it's simple economics. Between our shipping has went up. Our shipping has quadrupled across this country. I saw an interview with a onion farmer out in California, and he used to pay $3,000 for a semi truck to go from the West Coast to the East Coast. And now he's paying almost $20,000 for that same truck.
Holy moly.
So, you know, with shipping and all the inputs, whether it's packaging or staff, in my restaurant, a line cook, you know, I used to, that position used to pay, you know, $13 to $15 an hour. That same line cook I'm paying today $18 to $20 an hour. And you know, all these things factor in, and people think, well, it's the packer or it's the farmer, they're getting rich. Well, absolutely not, because all the input costs go up on us too. The fertilizer has went through the roof.
I heard about that.
Our ag community. We feedlot our cattle, our fats, and we get spent grain, brewer's grain from Budweiser up here in North Columbus. You know, that stuff's went up 15%. Just all of our inputs that we use around here, whether it's our fuel, and everything factors into that steak that you're taking home.
Right. Awesome. That's interesting. Well, yeah, I'm worried about that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just going to say thank you so much for coming on our show. For people tuning in who want to know more about Joe Blystone, maybe want to get a yard sign, something along those lines, how do they do so?
Well, firstly, you know, I'll be in Youngstown on Friday night. Okay. So if there's folks up around you guys, they want to come out, they want to meet me firsthand, they want to shake my hand, look in my eye, ask their own questions, they really do need to come out and participate. That's the best way. Get in front of me and ask your questions. And don't be afraid to ask me anything, because I'll answer anything. And I tell people, I'm just straightforward with people. If I don't know the answer, I just tell you I don't know it. That's the kind of person I am. You know, I'm not a politician that's going to BS you. They can go to our website, blystoneforgovernor.com, and that's spelled out. And you can get on there, and we have our policies on there. And also, you can host an event on there. You can go on there and donate. But we got a little over 80 days. So this is the sprint to the end. And we have a lot to do. We have a big movement going on all over this state. I'm pretty happy with where we're sitting at the moment. And I think good things are going to come. But people have to remember, get involved, get out there and push the Blystone name, talk to people in their communities, and May 3rd, yeah, got to get out there and vote.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on our show. Best of luck to you. I will definitely be watching the polls over the next few months, and we'll see what happens. I think it's an interesting race nonetheless. And so, again, best of luck to you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please subscribe to our podcast and share it. And we'll be back next time. Take care,
everybody. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Take care, guys.